All right, good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and you're watching the Saturday Morning Tech Show. We're just going to hang out today on Google Plus, and we've made the room available to anyone that wants to join. And we got a couple of well-known faces, and along with one of our TPN members, and we'll actually talk about that. I'll just give everybody a second here to introduce themselves real quick. But Andrew Smith's joining in. But let's see if I can make myself seen here. But it's early here in Honolulu, and I'm looking forward to talking about a number of topics today. We've got Steve Lee on. Steve, good morning, and why don't you introduce yourself and your website?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I'm Steve Lee. I'm the head honcho behind NetCastDio over at NetCastDio.com, where we have shows in tech and many other very facets of life and information.
And I see Andrew just joined us, but I don't know if we've got a live webcam of you yet this morning. We see your face. Andrew, good morning. How are you? Is he with us yet? He may still be figuring out his... Yeah, but I'm still hearing breathing on, I don't know which one that's coming from. Let me check. I don't know where it's coming from. All right, good morning, Paul. Paul, how are you this morning?
Good. I'm just getting everybody in the Hangout circled up here because I don't have them in my circles yet, but they look like a great bunch of folks here this morning. And I'm in the heart of football country on a Saturday in Austin, Texas. Just a block from my house, we have blocks and blocks of tailgate parties. So I'm about to, when the Hangout's over, I'm going to jump out into the world of football and barbecue and excitement at the University of Texas. And I have a video podcast at spring.net. And if you want to find anything I do, just search for the term SpringNet, spring.net without the dot in it, and you'll find all kinds of videos about Austin, the Austin tech scene and South By and all that. And I see Todd every year at South By. It's a reunion time, isn't it, Todd? Back to you, Todd.
It is. And I didn't go last year just because it's turned into more of a more kiddie crowd. I hate to say it that like that. A younger crowd. And so I didn't go last year, but I may go this year. But I also got Gary on board. Gary, good morning. And
Hey, good morning, Todd. How are you this morning?
I've done good. I think I've hung out with you once before, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Good morning, Todd, and hello to Steve and Paul. And I see Andrew's in here, too, doing my morning rounds of the tech shows on Saturday in the morning before I join in with Leo Laporte. Okay. I'm here in Riverside, California, which is Orange Grove country, about maybe 40 miles west of Palm Springs and 60 miles east of the ocean. So I'm here.
Very cool. Well, yeah, he does 3 hours Saturday and Sunday on the radio. Then he switches over Sunday afternoon to do Twit. That's always pretty good. Beautiful studio up there, doesn't he?
Yeah, one of my goals is to get up there someday.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I've been to both of them. Yeah, it's just, even if you're not into it, it's cool to go check it out.
So we looks like we lost Andrew. He's probably trying to fix his camera and stuff, so hopefully he'll be back here in just a few minutes. But I just wanted to spend a few minutes first things this morning and talking with Steve just a little bit about are you starting to see your CES mail starting to come in, Steve, from companies already pitching you for the show?
And my inbox is getting flooded, which is actually.
Oh, I think someone. Boy, I don't know what happened. Go ahead, Steve.
I'd say yeah, those emails are really starting to. It's a good thing you can get, kind of a precursor of what's going on and what's being planned and some of the events and some of the people and products that are going to be there. So, you know, it's a good way to start educating yourself on what's going to be there.
Yeah, I actually put our page up, and so that we can start basically booking people, because I'm already having people ask me to book them for the live stream and to come by the booth. And I was like, Holy smacks, already, you know, and this is, you know, it, here we are, we're November 19th, 6 weeks, or 7 weeks away from the show, almost, and they're already asking to get on the schedule. So that's, in one sense, that's fantastic, but in another sense, it's like, you know, I didn't plan on starting to book people until, like, December 15th, so I had, like, 5 emails come in, and I actually went in and, did a, you know, set up our forms that we have at TPN.TV, and I think we're getting lots of feedback, Gary. I think we're getting, hearing you rattling around.
Yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, it's okay. So yeah, we're just talking here. Paul, have you ever attended CES or like maybe the old Comdex show or anything like that?
I went to Comdex for several years when I was big I was in computer sales and went there religiously. I took a video camera. I videoed every single booth at Comdex. I still have the video from years ago. And CES, the same thing. I religiously went there, made sure to go to every product, looked at every product, and it was like a religious mecca. And then I stopped going.
You know, I don't know how big the show was then, but you can't physically stop and look at every booth and make it through the show. You almost have to, I kind of call it grazing. You have to walk kind of a slow pace and you're doing a left, right, left, you know, you're doing that all, you know, left, right, get my direction straight here, but you have to it's just so, I think there's like 6,000 vendors, so and the entire LVCC is full. They're not in the Sands anymore, which helps, because that was a day just at the Sands because of the economy of the show got a little smaller. But this year, just like last year, we're going to be we have a live broadcast booth at the show. So we'll be doing 40 or 45 hours of content. Last year we interviewed, well over 200 shows. And I proudly say we interviewed probably 3 times as many shows as Leo's team does, because they do their regular program lineup there. They'd have their same programs that they record, and they don't go from 9 to 6 or whatever the hours are. They do shorter segments, and, so I would say last year, probably from a stream standpoint, we probably had more people through. I think our total viewer hours were, you know, and I've actually revised this because I've been talking with the Ustream folks, is they said we had about 900,000 viewer hours last year during the live show. So we had a huge audience, and our TPM members at Tech Podcast were simulcasting the show on like 23 different sites. So that really helped a lot. And so they reached out to me this year and said, hey, are you going to be up on Ustream? And I'm like, well, if you, we're going to have to talk about the ad situation, because they're running so many ads in their products now. It's being so aggressive that I had planned on using Amazon, like I'm using right now, to stream this show. So, we're pretty excited about going down. Now, Gary, have you ever been to CES at all?
No, I haven't. I haven't been to CES. I have an aversion to large crowds. I was listening to your comments about going slow and looking at all the exhibits. I go to some exhibits in one of my professional medical academies, and it's just like that. The exhibit hall is just, you can't take it all in. But it sort of reminds me of going slow. It's like sort of going up to the wine country in Marin. You want to go real slow, look left and right, and you're sure to drive back. You know? So that's my analogy.
And it's funny too, because I have certain ground rules, and Steve has heard this stuff already, but when we're walking through the Asian section, specifically the Chinese have a huge delegation. And what the Chinese do, they're really smart. They charter three or four commercial aircraft. and maybe more. I don't know how many the Chinese government charter, but every company that wants to go, they load their booths into and all their stuff into these commercial aircraft, and they fly that into Las Vegas, unload the gear, take it over to the show hall, and then all the Chinese booths have all their stuff flown in by the Chinese government, obviously saving them huge amounts of money on shipping. I don't know what the Chinese government, if they charge them anything whatsoever. I don't know what that arrangement is. But you'll literally walk by a booth that will have nothing but power cords in it. Another booth will have batteries, and it's just a full gamut of stuff. And they're writing multi-million dollar purchase orders right there on the show floor. But that section, I kind of call it the Akihabara of CES. The press paid very little attention to them. And generally, you might find two or three interesting things in their section that would be worthy of recording. But it's fun to see them hiding the knockoffs when we're coming through. They see a camera coming, and the first thing they do is if they've got a... And last year it was the big iPad knockoffs. So we were laughing as we would come through, and they would be hiding stuff or telling us don't record certain things, but CES is open. We can record anything. So I make sure when we're going through there, if we see something that is suspect, we immediately turn the camera on and start recording it before they hide it. So it's kind of funny watching the Chinese delegation, but you don't stop there. If you stop, you're going to have the very aggressive Chinese business person quite literally almost grabbing the mic out of your hand, asking for an interview. So anyway, that's some of the stuff that we encounter, at least in the Chinese section of CES. And
kind of interesting, Todd, because I don't think most people go there to buy power cords, but to see the future.
Yeah. And well, believe it or not, this is a trade show where if you have a buyer tag on your, you know, they will talk to a buyer way longer before they will talk to you. They're there to sell product and make orders. These are where most of these guys do. They do a majority of their new business for the year right out of this show. And that's just like, you know, but in another thing it happens too is the bigger the booth, well, a small 10 by 10 guy, you know, he's your mom and pop shop. He's had to put everything on a credit card to get there. You know, he's staying on the outskirts of town in a hotel that, you know, he's basically there on a tight budget. And those are the guys that, boy, oh boy, they'll talk to you and they'll share with you what they've got and their new stuff. And we find more cool stuff in the small booths than we do in the big booths. And of course, everyone wants to see the Panasonics and the JVCs of the world and the Sonys. But you get into those booths and you have to be handled. In fact, many times they won't even let you record anything unless you have a handler, you've made an appointment. They're very strict about it. Last year, Samsung, they were over the top crazy. You couldn't come into the booth with a blogger press badge on and record a piece of gear without them coming over and getting in your face and making you go check in. That's the first we ever saw that last year. It was the first time because they were trying to control the message completely. And it seems also, too, the bigger the camera you walk in. If you've got a big, huge camera, the more they pay attention to you if you come in with a small camera. But, you know, the way these small cameras are and as heavy as the big ones are, it's the smaller cameras are better to cover the show with on your shoulder and your psyche by the end of the week after you've walked 100 miles. I see Andrew Smith has gotten in here. Andrew, I guess you got your webcam issues solved, yeah?
Good evening or good morning, gentlemen, depending on your time zone. Yeah, it's always kind of nice how technology works every time exactly the way you expect it.
And so, and if you could, Andrew, bring your volume down about 50%. You just blew us out.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, your mic's a little hot there. Just a slight bit on the hot side.
Yeah, just
I can do that.
Just slightly.
We can do that.
We definitely have a problem hearing anybody this morning. So, Andrew, what you're part of our team going to CES as well, and this is the first year that we're bringing. You do a little different show on the tech side. You do tell everybody about your show.
Yeah, what I'm doing, and I hope I'm not blowing too much right now. I'm trying to work on the volume here. Basically, what I work on is what's known as geocaching. And what that is kind of think of it as using a multi-billion dollar satellite system to find Tupperware in the woods. So it's treasure hunting for adults and for family members that is literally done all around the world. There's over 1.5 million geocaches hidden. And you go through a series of listing sites to get coordinates to where these geocaches are hidden, and you go out and find them. It's a very addicting, very problem-solving type of game, sport, and obsession. So that's what I do. So a lot of the technology-based things that I deals with a lot of the outdoors type things. So, for example, GPS units, photography, any type of mapping systems that people use. So that's the areas that my technology expertise goes into.
Cool. Yeah, we still got you pretty hot, so I'll let you work on your audio levels there. Have any of you guys ever done any geocaching? I've never done any geocaching. Have anybody that's... I don't have time.
No experience with that one.
Paul, you haven't done... Have you done any geocaching at all? None? None so far?
Well, to be honest, there's so much stuff that I do with the podcast, with GeoSnippets videos, with doing Geocaching World and everything else. I don't have time to do a lot of geocaching.
Yeah, when I was in Virginia last week, one of the guys says, "Hey, there's a geocache across the street." And I'm like, okay.
It's one of those things, once you start it, you get hooked.
I think we lost Paul. I think his audio went down or maybe. But what I want to do today is I have a number of articles that I've kind of looked at over the past couple of days, some stuff that broke yesterday, and just want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the tech space. And one of the things that affects everyone that's a content creator out there, especially those that are blogging, is images on your website. Number one, you have to make sure that you make sure you deal with the copyright issue so you're not using copyrighted images, but also keeping the image sizes down to a size that are a much better performance-wise so that you can make sure that page loads faster. So Google, and I really was not up to speed on this, but last year Google introduced a new image format for the web called WebP. And WebP is meant to be a modern alternative to the popular, but really kind of, I guess, patent-incumbent JPEG standard. Now, it what it does is this new WebP format produces significantly smaller files without sacrificing image quality. And Google announced some new features to WebP that may bring a wider adoption. So, for example, if you look at a WebP image, and I'm looking here in an article that was on siliconfilter.com talking about the PNG sizes, taking the same image with a standard PNG, the file size was 118.5 kilobits. In the WebP lossless, it was 88.1. With the WebP lossless with alpha, it was 23.4, which is amazing size difference. But normally the lossless file size would be basically offer about a 45% reduction in size when starting with a PNG. So the thing I really am thinking about is, you know, here most of us, when we're out shooting with our cameras, whether you have a Canon and a Nikon or whatever it is, and you're setting your resolution levels to the levels that you need to, I just don't see... You know, be honest with you, I wasn't really up to speed on this. Now, Steve or Andrew or any of you guys that do any photography stuff, did you guys even have any insight into this WebP format that Google's been trying to push?
No, I've heard of it, but in a lot of ways, I've just kind of ignored it because it's really not the standard yet. Although the the compression is, you know, pretty incredible, but it's still pretty much a manual process.
Hmm.
And if there was a plugin like this, like Smush It, but it did WebP, I think that would be pretty amazing.
Now, here's, go ahead.
Oh, I'm done.
What is WebP? I mean, I've got this new video camera. Does it have WebP built into it?
This is,
how do I know?
No, it's strictly for stills. And here's the weird thing. I don't know if it's a, okay, they've introduced a module for Apache. It's called a mod page speed module for Apache, which converts JPEGs to WebP on the fly. So this is something that's done internally as the page loads. They, and I can't imagine that being better performance for page speed, to, you know, have to rebuild these files every time the page is loaded. But no, I just run across this the other day. I probably have as much information on this as you guys do. But maybe someone that's part of the audience that is a regular listener of the show will come back and drop us a line and let us know more about WebP. But yeah, most of these cameras are taking JPEGs or PNGs or whatever format that they're set to. And then when I get them out of the camera, then I just manipulate them with a picture editing software and convert them and resize them and convert them down to what I want to, you know, the format I want to use. And that's I've been using PNG myself.
So. You can go over to code at google.com and you can look at the converters and things like that. I think I'm going to experiment with a little of this and see how it really does respond with web pages and web loading.
Yeah. So anyway, just kind of something interesting I found. So I thought I would bring it up and talk about it here for just a second. Big news last night, of course, and I'm not surprised that this was coming because there was rumor Thursday that this was going to pop. But Sarah Lacey over at TechCrunch, the CEO, has left. She's leaving. And so this makes some addition, you know, you got Mike that's left, of course, Mike Arrington, Paul Carr, MG Siegler, who've left. No, you've got Sarah. So you've got, you know, four of the big dogs that have left. Now, potentially Heather Hardy is, I think she's the CEO, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. So Heather Hardy's a CEO. She's being rumored to leave. So I don't know what fully Sarah's job was over there. I guess she was right-hand man to Mike, but she's out.
What are they doing? Starting something else? Or is this a unified exodus, or is it they're all going different places?
Well, you know, it was a big battle, you know, a big power play, obviously, with Arianna Huffington. And whenever I say her name, I want to say, I imagine that, you know, that old commercial for Grey Poupon, Arianna Huffington. So, she's the powerhouse at AOL on their publishing side. And, you know, I guess it was all a power play and she's the boss and a lot, the buck stops here. And, you know, with Mike getting bounced.
I read somewhere else that Michael and Arianna Huffington sat down for coffee and kind of looked at each other across the table and decided who was going to be the alpha person here.
Oh.
And I guess they broke up peacefully. And the next thing, well, Michael, I think, had already left.
Yeah.
But Sarah Lacey was sitting down. Well, that's right. I don't know who it was. It was Michael. And Michael, I guess, after that encounter, decided to leave. And then Sarah really enjoyed working with Michael. So I think she decided to leave. I guess they were bought. TechCrunch was purchased by, yeah. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah. So they lasted a year with AOL being at the control. So, I'm just going to be curious to see how the influence of TechCrunch is going to be now. As he's,
well, in the world of tech, that's a century.
Well, that's true. So we'll see how the site's quality stays up. Now Sarah was out on baby leave, so I guess while this was happening, so she's basically trying to she's going on to something else. This is funny. She says in her blog post. Let me see if I can find the section I laughed about. The weekend is my contraction started. The TechCrunch dramas unfolded. Mike would text me things like, "Are you sitting on the couch drinking tea kind of labor, or screaming blood all over the walls kind of labor? Because I need to talk to you." So, you know, I guess, you know, here it's, you know, you don't want to mess with a woman when she's in labor. That's the last, you know, you don't want to talk any business. There's no rational decisions that can be made. It's, you know, it's all of us that went through that know exactly what I'm talking about. So,
ever since the sale of this organization and this site, it's been a debacle. You know, but you got to look at, there's a differential between when you kind of have a privately owned a blog tech site and when it comes under some kind of a corporation umbrella, where there's stipulations and there's mandates and there's, you know, the thumb on top of your head. The description of articles and information is going to be totally different, and people are going to get torqued off and leave.
Yep.
I call it the golden rule. He who has the gold rules.
Exactly. You're right. It's true. And he who pays.
I have to tennis you out of here. I've got another thing that I have to take care of, but good to be here again today. I hope I'll be back soon.
Thanks, Gary.
Great talking to you.
You bet.
I circled you.
Well, thank you. You're in my circle as well.
So another thing that popped today was all of a sudden folks are starting to, our companies are starting to figure out these ultra portables are pretty popular. So as many 50 new Intel ultrabooks will be launched at CES. So we're going to get to see lots of light, sexy MacBook Air type of PCs at the device. So we're going to see, you know, really a flurry here of ultra thin laptops. And I don't know. Do anybody have it? Does any of you guys have a MacBook Air? Have an ultra, as they're calling it, an ultrabook?
I have a MacBook Air and I have a MacBook Pro that's way more powerful, much bigger screen, but I use the MacBook Air 10 times more than I use the MacBook Pro, just because I can throw it in my pack and run with it.
But you are saying that it's a lot less powerful, right? So you give up performance?
Yeah, I give up performance for just lightweight, because I'm on foot a lot of the time. I'll walk like 5-10 miles a day. I just like to have a light as possible backpack.
Yeah, Steve or Andrew, do you guys have?
You know, I use a MacBook Pro when I'm traveling, but when I want to be portable, I use my iPad and not a MacBook Air.
Yeah, same here. My big thing is the iPad. Absolutely use that everywhere.
And I find myself, when I know that I'm not going to have to do any heavy lifting, also on the iPad. And of course, I got the Kindle Fire here. I've been playing with that over the last.
I just got mine yesterday.
And what do you think?
I haven't had a chance to really play a lot with it. You know, I think it's got good components and it's got a few sluggish components. I'm not sure it's going to replace my Kindle, but for maybe some portable things that use Amazon services, you know, my wife's going to be taking this over and she's a big Amazon user. So in that respect, it's going to be okay, but I'm still going to stick with my iPad, though. I don't think they're apple and oranges, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's got a few neat features. They still need to work on that browser.
Yeah, and, you know, the $199 price point, I have to temper what I have to say about the Fire, because it is a $199 price point. You know, I'll be honest, though. After having used the Kindle app on my iPad and then looking at that screen to read a book and just using it as a book reader, I'm going to be using my iPad. Yeah. But it still serves a lot of other purposes. And for the folks that are just getting started with their first tablet, I think they'll be okay. I think they'll do good. And if we're watching videos and that kind of stuff, it'll be fun. But, you know, it's only got 6 gigs or 7 gigs of memory. So yeah, it doesn't have much memory in it. And you can't,
you know,
why didn't they put an SD card in the stupid thing?
I know it. I know that would really have been an extra big selling point. But, you know, the form factor is interesting too, versus an iPad or some other things. And, you know, for my wife, it's a great form factor, because it can just, you know, fit in her purse or in a glove compartment. And in that respect, and like you said about the price point, I think they're going to sell a heck of a lot of them.
Well, Steve, you know, obviously your wife must carry a much smaller purse than mine does, because my wife's iPad will fit in her purse. So.
Yeah, I guess we've got a relationship.
You know,
I got this bag for my iPad. It's just the right size for an iPad, plus a few other items that I carry around.
Well, let me restate it. She can put it in her cosmetic purse.
That's true. But I guess for $199, it's a price point that I think with the economy the way it is just the right price for people to say, well, I can't afford an iPad, but I can't afford the Kindle Fire. And even though it's Wi-Fi only, I think they'll sell a buttload.
How is it functionality app wise? Are people going to be able to do the same thing that you can do on an iPad, at least even having the availability of apps?
Yeah, I went to Amazon Android App Store. That's the only difference is it is on Amazon's App Store, so developers will have to have submitted to the Amazon App Store, but there's lots of, large selection over there. I loaded our Blueberry app up and played with it, and there was a few little things that were a little different, but what I've been finding out, and this is something that is a big issue in the Android space, is if you send something to the Android marketplace, you send something to the Amazon marketplace, and you send something to the Nook marketplace, every app, they do their images just a little different. So it's not like you can send that same package to all three sites. You have to repackage each app for each site and there's no universal graphic size for each store, which is completely insane. I have no idea why they're going to cause the Android market to be fragmented. Matter of fact, we because of what we've learned, we have a fixed amount of money that we charge to roll out an Android app, and we've increased the price based upon how many stores you want to be in. So if you want to be in the Android App Store, the Amazon App Store, and the Nook App Store, it's a different price than doing an iPhone app, just because I only have to submit one app to Apple, and it's smart enough to work on all devices. So
that's interesting, Todd. I didn't know that, because I've noticed that, but I thought it was a device differential, not necessarily what you just spoke of on specification.
Well, there is device differences too. So, you have to deal with the nuances of the different devices as well. And that's a whole nother train wreck. But none of these, for the mobile devices, none of them have come out and worked together and said, this set of images will work universally. And that's what they should have done. But they haven't.
That's where Apple succeeded with their the store, is that here's the specs, follow them.
Yeah.
Well, it's a whole lot easier if you're doing one particular device as opposed to, so many different flavors across the board through the Android world. I mean, they went through that with PCs. Same exact thing. You go out and you put out a video game. How many different flavors of things did you have to do to make it work right on everybody's console?
Yeah. So this is just one of those, one of those things now that, we're looking at, and it's a mess. And just like Google TV, so not only did, so what we had to do, what we've done with Apple is you have one app and it has different images in, and it knows whether it's an iPad, an iPhone, or an iPod. And with Google TV, we've got our Google TV app now submitted, but we thought we were all ready. We had it all ready. We'd put in all the code, everything to make it work, to make the, to work it on a screen versus a television screen versus working on a screen that had a, touch screen. And we basically got the update for Google TV and did the testing and said, oh my God, this is messed up, because we're going to have to do these additional things. And we actually had to fork our app, because there is no way to publish one app and have it work for Google TV and the devices. So now there's going to be a Google TV app and there's going to be a device app, which is totally, I mean, just, you know, does not make any sense. Now, hopefully the store is smart enough when you're at the Amazon store in with Google TV that it only shows your one app on for Google TV, and it will see if they got that figured out with the store. But time will tell.
What a mess. You know, and all that does for you is increase your development costs.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, and you know, I was pretty hard on the programming team because, you know, I said, you know, when this thing updates, all you guys got to go through is check the app, make sure it's work. I want this thing published in 24 hours. Well, Google TV popped. We loaded it. And it was broke. And we're like, so, you know, you spent a week fixing it. And, you know, it's live and learn. Now we know what to look for. But Google didn't do any pre-release to anyone. So you couldn't have been working on this with some sort of a, you know, an emulator. And they've got an Android emulator, but they don't have an emulator for Google TV. So, yeah, they really, you know, Apple's really got this figured out. And these other companies don't. But you just got to play by their rules. And you got to be in the devices. If you're not, you're dead in the water. And so it's a big challenge. What do you guys think about folks over at Libsyn taking podcast.com and decimating it?
What are they doing?
They decimated, Todd. I'm not up on this.
They basically removed every show from the site that's not part of their, basically, I don't know if I want to say, well, it's part of their little core group. There might be 100 shows listed on podcast.com now.
And it's not even if you host with them, it's their selected ones that they want.
Yeah, they're selected ones. They're chosen ones.
Who runs that now?
Well, podcast.com apparently is run by Libsyn or Wizard.
I mean, Media. who's the person behind it?
Well, Wizard is being reverse acquiring a Chinese company, so I would assume, because it's the Chinese company that they're acquiring is bigger than them, that it's the Chinese company that's running the company. I don't know. I don't know how that's working. They're doing one of these reverse acquisitions so that the Chinese company can get access to the stock market.
What I meant was, who's the Ted Turner of podcast.com?
We don't know. Someone that is, we think it's Libsyn. It's part of Wizard Media.
Okay.
So does that tend to show the fingerprint for that as well? If you have a bunch of people that, you know, aren't in the podcast world, they're just making decisions way up high, things like that's when that happens.
Well, I think this was a strategic move by Libsyn to take over that very valuable domain name and highlight their top shows. So, you know, it's a good move on their part from a money perspective. And if I'd have known that podcast.com was in play, I'd have talked to them.
But yeah, that's the exact reason. The domain name, their top shows, boy, there's a lot of revenue there when you're talking about their top shows.
So again, though, but you know, it was one of those topics that came up at Blog World, is the word podcast even so much, you know, being used anymore? Is it more new media creators, content creators? And is it just another reason to shy away from using the, you know, being overtly big on podcasts? Is it, you know, or are we just all media creators? And now we equal with the big boys out there.
Todd, which term do you like? A, webcast, B, netcast, yeah. C, podcast. Well, A, B, or C?
I think, you know, I think I use new media. I think I use podcasting. I think I use content creators. I don't necessarily use netcast because most podcasters don't netcast. And I consider netcast to be more like this, a live stream thing. But, you know, it's just content, you know, that's what it boils down to.
You know, for me, even though my domain name is netcaststudio.com, we still consider all of our stuff podcasts.
Yeah.
Call them that. And, you know, so there's a thing between nomenclature and the technical description of what things are.
True. That's true. Well, anyway, just I thought that was kind of curious what they did over there. And not too many, you know, no one's screaming, so I guess no one cares what they've done. Hey, let's talk about this foreign hacker targeting a U.S. water plant and a malicious cyber attack. Apparently, foreign hackers caused a pump at an Illinois water plant to fail last week. According to this report, this apparently attack came out of Eastern Europe, more likely Russia or China. And there was a the report blamed damage on the actions of somebody using a computer registered to an internet address in Russia. It's believed that hackers had acquired unauthorized access to software the company's database, and this used this information to penetrate the control system for the water pump. What if that had been in a nuclear power plant?
Well, that's where security becomes so important for that. That's where you you make darn sure that the network firewalls are, and we're not talking your standard PC firewalls. You're talking, you know, corporate security type things have to be in place, especially the more, like you said, a nuclear plant. You don't want somebody getting into their main servers.
Well, you know, they're also, I think there's something in a congressional committee or somewhere at the national level where they're talking about actually initiating a military strike against a hacker if it's at the level of a nuclear power plant or something like that. Although most of these hacks, they come out of China or Russia, so I don't think they're going to send a drone into China or Russia, you know, to counterattack against a hacking incident. Do you?
I can't imagine that they would. It'd be all out war, but maybe it'll be a cyber attack in return. Steve, what's your thoughts on the hack?
Gosh, you know, the the bad guys and the vicious tale. You know, I guess from an overall perspective, it's no different than maybe during the Cold War, except now we have electronic booths that are doing these kinds of things. And you know, our government is not stupid, and you know, they're going to counterattack or defend in any way they can. But you know, I think you're just going to continually see this on a rise until we come up to a, you know, a big to head confrontation on what we're going to do about cybercrime and all these different things.
Now, it was funny that you know, this is on the heels of a speech that was given by that insane president in Iran, Ahmadinejad or whatever his name is.
I have a better word.
What'd you say, Steve?
I have a better word for him.
Okay. What's
what's the word? Cal safe.
Well, anyway, he did a speech recently where, well, let's do some background. First of all, the Stuxnet virus took out a large number of their centrifuges. And supposedly, if you listen to the news, set back their nuclear weapons development. So anything that sets them back in any type of weapons development is, you know, in my opinion, is good news. But what he said in a speech recently was that they would beat us in, I can't remember the first word he said, not by troops on the ground or something like that, but by their software. The thing that it was this and software. And that kind of like never made any mainstream press. I heard about it on another show. And he basically raised the fact that, okay, well, we may not beat you militarily wise, but we'll beat you with our software. I'm like, are you going to beat us with your software? That smells cyber attack to me. So I just hope industry is going to wake up here and get their stuff locked down. Now, what they say happened here was that they were able to get access to a database that had all the usernames and passwords in. Why would you have the usernames and passwords in a database? You know, that just tells you how lax industry, you know, power, water, sewage, if they have that in a database, it just makes me go, wow, they've known this has been an issue. that they burned it out by turning it on and off frequently, and it burned out. So
I would think the real penetration points aren't necessarily with our federal, but with our utilities companies and right. Some of our major defense contractors that have contracts with the federal government that are a little more lax within that realm.
You know, all our electrical infrastructure is managed by rudimentary control switches from Siemens and other groups like that. And I'm not saying Siemens stuff is hackable, but, you know, all you got to do is get in those industrial, that code is very, like, you know, like it's third grade-ish. It's really rudimentary. Turn on, turn off, you know. And so if that stuff becomes, and it's all software controlled now, so, you know, they can shut the grid down. Well, anyway.
Well, it says here in the, I'm reading the Daily Mail out of UK. It says, when warranted, we will respond to hostile attacks in cyberspace as we would to any other threat to our country, Congress noted. Hostile attacks would include significant cyber attacks directed against the U.S. economy, government, or military, and the response could use conventional military options or electronic means. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, switching gear here, you know, all of us hang out on Google Plus quite a little bit. And have you guys been looking at the trending topic at all in Google Plus? Are you using that instead of your circles? Are you bouncing over there to see what a trending topic is or for discovering new stuff?
I haven't. I still basically use Twitter for that kind of functionality versus Google Plus.
Yeah, I think though on Twitter, I don't know. I find myself over at Twitter less and less and less. I'm just not getting a lot of value out of it. But I've done Paul, you're on here on Google Plus a lot, and I'm sure you've refined your circles significantly. You know, I really if I start seeing junk coming from someone, they kind of go in. I got a circle called junk, and they go in my junk circle. You know, if they're putting cat videos and animated GIFs and, you know, not really adding to the conversation, I'm filtering everyone pretty significantly here. You know, what are you doing, Paul? Are you using trending at all?
I'm going to do what you did. I just got an idea from you to start a junk circle, so that's what I'm going to do. You've got it figured out, Todd. I'm going to do that.
But that is the day on the start.
But you know the junk circle too, and then if they're in the junk circle and I see that they're doing a lot more junk, then I just unfollow or uncircle. You know, is the best way to say it, and it's really helped keep my feed of data that's just got this. You know, some people are putting out some awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I could watch the stream for 2 hours, I could do my show prep for my show right from the stream. But it you know, I don't have time to do 2 hours of prep looking through the stream like that. So yeah, it's and I've been watching trending a little bit, and some of the stuff that trends is some of that weird stuff too. So from my standpoint, I haven't gotten a lot of use out of the trending yet.
Do you tend to use streams more then for specific things?
Yeah, and I have everyone broke down. Now, for example, let me look and see if I think I've got about 20 circles. I got people broke into categories, content creators like us, people part of TPN, part of my team. I've got venture capitalists. I've got CEOs that are notable. I have people that are following me that I think are cool that I'm following back in a separate pile. You know, so I've kind of, you know, I really micromanaged the circles list right from the very beginning. And as I add people, I'm very careful on where I put them. It's not a perfect thing at all, but it seems to work out fairly well from the standpoint of knowing what type of content I want. And you like the Dell team. I'm following the Dell team as a complete separate circle. Same thing with HP and different groups like that. Because some of these guys slip and they say stuff sometimes they probably shouldn't. And, you know, you can get a lot out of, you know, innuendos. And did I just say that right? You know, you really can watch it and kind of get a feel for what's going on at a company. And it's just like, you know, you take a piece here, a piece there, a piece here, a piece there, and piece there, and all of a sudden you've got a scoop. Not one person revealed the whole story, but if you look through a long list of stuff, you can pretty much, you know, sometimes you can put a pretty good, and that's what the, you know, it's what the government does. They look for little bits and pieces and try to put it together.
No, I don't know about you guys, but for me and what we're doing, we have really started moving everything more off of Facebook to Google Plus because of that stream mechanism, and we can't see that storyline through Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in to us, Facebook anymore has become just a place, like you said, Todd, for those kitty pictures, and we're not getting any real value with our audience anymore. But as we're migrating over to Plus, it makes a whole big difference in that.
Yeah, Facebook is kind of like family talk. Google Plus is, I kind of relate it to more structured talk. And Twitter is kind of like this stream of whatever.
Well, right now I'm looking at trends, and it's like Breaking Dawn, No Idea, Natalie Wood, lived a long time ago, Saif al-Islam Muammar, No Idea, Tiger Woods, okay, Regis Philbin, Jeremy London, Yale University. None of those really interest me right now.
And if they would have trends that were topical, I think that would help too. How about science trends? How about entertainment trends? How about, you know, why hasn't Twitter done that? And give us some, you know, some filtered trend list. And the way I do that is I do it through searches. But, you know, those aren't perfect, and they're done on the whim. So we'll see how it goes. Hey, moving on to a different topic here. Bloomberg Businessweek is reporting, talking about Sony. And they're saying, what is Sony now? Now, if you guys think back, all of us are probably long enough in a tooth to remember the Sony Walkman days. And, you know, just, you know, I can't imagine, you know, just think back to when you got your iPod, your first iPod, and compare that to your first Walkman. Those, to me, were pretty close to being the same type of feelings of jubilance, being able to take my music with me. It was cool. So Sony here in recent years, what have they done? And what,
they make great TVs. I'm watching you on a Sony Bravia XBR 52 right now, and it's a stunning picture.
So they do great TVs, but what else do they do? What have they done, really anything innovative? And that's what Bloomberg is saying.
Well, they've gone a lot into media. If you've seen, okay, I admit it, I am a video game junkie, and they've worked a lot on, especially over the past 5-6 years or so, with online gaming environments. So they've gotten a lot into that. And if you go into a electronics store right now, if you see X Factor and some of these other ones, Sony has got their logo plastered everywhere.
Sony currently has 168,200 employees, 41 factories, 2,000 products, everything from a headphone to medical printers, to Hollywood-grade 3D movie production equipment. They obviously do TVs well. But is there anything, you know, I guess what I'm looking for here is what I'm trying to, while they may be a huge company, they had a predicted loss of $1.2 billion this year. Don't they need something? Don't they need an Apple moment where they come out with something really cool? You know, they've been trying to break into the internet stuff for a while here, and I don't think they've been very successful at it. Matter of fact, I quit buying Sony laptops because of their reliability. They could never get one to last beyond 2 years. So
Sony Pictures is in talks with publishers to get rights to making the Steve Jobs film about his life. And that's what they need. They need a Steve Jobs. They need somebody who's a visionary at the head of their company that can it can say, not react to what people want, but initiate what people want, you know, what people will adopt.
Yeah.
I think you're right, because, you know, back in the day when you would walk through a store in the consumer electronics area, it was nothing but Sony stuff, you know, and then Apple kind of poked that in the eye. But you find a lot of these companies, you know, they kind of lose their identity and kind of lose their vision as technology you know, migrates, but I think you're right that Sony really doesn't know what space they play in. They've tried to play in all of them.
Yeah, and they play well in many of them, obviously. And I, you know, they, you're right though, Paul. You know, the, I've got a Sony, you know, flat screen, not flat screen, but I've got a, we haven't, our 60 inch projection hasn't failed yet, so we're still on a you know, big H. But it's a beautiful TV. It's a, you got a beautiful, you know, beautiful screen. But you know, now we're, you know, my next probably TV is going to be a Samsung Smart TV, because I want, you know, and maybe I'll buy one of the Sony Google TVs. I don't know. Maybe that's what I'll go with next. But what I really want is an Apple TV, but a true Apple TV. But we'll see if they bring that to us next year. I don't know. I just think I keep watching what Sony, and Sony does cameras great. They do pro cameras. So they do a lot of good things. But from a consumer side, I just wish they would come up with something that was wower. But maybe they don't want to.
I just bought a camera, and it wasn't a Sony. This is what I just got. It's a
Canon. You know, those are really nice. They have done a great job with that new line. What did that run you?
$1,300 on Amazon.
Does that one have a, that's the H, what is the model on that?
It's a G10. HF space G10.
Yeah, HF G10. Now they've come out with a, they've got the I think three of those, and the one of them gets into the pro line and has an Action SDI on it for, I think, under $3,000. They've got a camera now on the Canon side that has an SDI out, and that's a remarkable price. So if you like, what's the format that that records in? Does that record in that Sony format or an MP4?
Well, no, it's got I don't know. It's got two 64 gig SD cards, but they're SDX or something.
Right,
they're like the next
right.
level up. So, and it's got a battery. I bought a bunch of batteries on Amazon. They're huge. They're like, that'll go for 5 hours.
Wow. And that's a pretty nice camera. It looks nice.
It's awesome pictures. It does an awesome job in low light. So that's going to be my South by Southwest camera this year.
Cool.
But it's not a Sony.
Years ago,
it would have been a Sony. The relevance of showing you that is that it's not a Sony camera.
Yeah. I think I saw that last year at CES. That is a nice camera. Hey, let's change topics here. Let's move on from Sony. Let's talk about Facebook for a second. Facebook is basically finally saying that they're rumoring that they're going to file their S-1. The S-1 filing is what is required to basically set up the IPO. But they have to get the banks that are going to do the underwriting and stuff before they can file the S-1. Some people are surprised because they thought Zuckerberg would wait, but a lot of employees are very excited because a lot of employees have a lot of stock that they're waiting to cash in on. So do you, you know, you think about the feeding frenzy that has went on for Google and different companies. I can't even imagine what is going to happen when Facebook does their IPO and how much money. Do you think Zuck will be the world's richest man? Do you think he'll basically bump Steve Jobs, not Steve Jobs, but bump Bill Gates out of the list? Or where do you think, you know, how big do you guys think this IPO is going to be?
Oh, people are going to be it's going to be like a stampede on Black Friday, trying to get into the store first. He'll be the richest man in the world.
I wish I was an institutionalized investor, because that's the only way you're going to get in on the IPO or know somebody. You know, us smucks down here in the weeds, we're not going to get any access to that stock for sure. And we probably wouldn't be able to afford it. I just can't, I don't know what it's going to be priced at, but I would imagine we probably wouldn't even be able to afford it if we were able to get it.
It'll be $400 or $500 a share probably.
I was reading right off the internet just now about that, and they're talking $100 billion IPO.
It's crazy. $100 billion.
$100 billion.
Man,
I'm surprised it's that low. I'm surprised it's so low.
Could you imagine?
I'm surprised it's not $1 for every person. A $750 billion IPO.
Steve, how would you have liked to have been like the 100th employee of Facebook?
I'd have been the 101st. You know, that's just the way my luck goes. You know, when these come up, and you know, whether it was LinkedIn or Google, like, I just kind of shake my head, and you know, where is Zuckerberg's head at?
Right.
You know, he wants this finite control. In a lot of ways, he's going to lose that.
True.
So is the value to him the money or the control of the company, and how he wants to move Facebook down the road is probably something that could be discussed for a long, long time. So I think he's probably getting pressure from somewhere.
Well, he's getting pressure. He's getting pressure from all the employees that hold stock that are basically they have to stay there, and I'm sure their options require them to not leave the company in order to cash out. So you've got.
So once he does that, is he potentially going to lose those good people too?
Well, once you become an instant millionaire, would you stay and work, or would you go do your own thing?
No. So that's another reason why I'm not sure why he's thinking down that line.
I think what will happen was that they'll have to do the IPO. Some people will leave, but those folks that were very innovative in the beginning, they'll start a whole new cottage. You know, that will feed, you know, more startups and stuff. So I'm excited. I hope he IPOs it, and it's definitely going to be a day to remember from an IPO standpoint. I just wish I was in the position and it was an institutionalized. Oh. What happened here? We lost our hangout. Oh, that's weird. Oh, that's odd. I have no idea why I.
We just lost the server.
Yeah, something happened.
Yeah, I got kicked out too.
Yeah, so.
Todd, do you think he'll become the world's first trillionaire?
Wow.
Oh, I don't know.
He could become the world's first trillionaire.
Yeah, I don't know how much percentage he still holds, but. Yeah, something happened on Google Plus. We all got bounced.
The server bounced us.
Reboot.
So let me go ahead and, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but it's going to be exciting to watch on the Facebook side.
I like what Steve Jobs said when they interviewed him, the guy who wrote that book. He was on some interview, and he said, when I became a millionaire, I just kept to the same interests, basically, and didn't have to have the best car or the best everything. But he said all the people around him, all of a sudden they had to have a Lamborghini. They had to have a house with 100 rooms in it and all this. And he basically stayed pure and stayed the same guy, you know? So if Zuckerberg can, I think he's kind of like that in a way. He may stay the same guy, even though he may be the world's first trillionaire.
One thing that
the people around him will just fall to pieces.
One thing that my wife and I did was when we got married, I was still active duty military, and I was my rank was E5, and we basically kind of made a pact together that we would try to live within that salary range for about the first 10 years of our marriage. So what happened was every time I got promoted and made more money or got a pay raise, we took that money that we earned, as it was extra, and we were setting that aside for retirement. And so what it really did was when I retired, I was already, I hadn't grown my household budget to the levels that I was when I was active duty. So I didn't, you know, basically I was still living off of the amount of money that we got when we first got married, and it really made a big difference in us being able to have more flexibility. I think what happens too often, like you said, Paul, when people get all of a sudden get rich, then their lifestyle changes into a rich lifestyle, and they're just a different form of broke.
Yeah, it happened to my cousin Barney, who lives near you in Honolulu. And we used to be great friends, and then all of a sudden he sold his company for $150 million. And like, it's like, I can't talk to him anymore because he's so involved with the money and the position and the status, you know? So
right,
that's what happens to people. They corrupt them. It's sad, especially when it disrupts families and disrupts relationships with people.
I want to give it a try, guys.
Steve, you know, it'd be kind of fun for a week, wouldn't it? Or two or three.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
It's American way.
You know, and it's interesting too with that, where, you know, you talk 150 million and people go, wow. And then you say a billion and then a trillion. I couldn't wrap my head around 150 million, let alone $1 trillion. I mean, where do you get to that point where there's just so much money available there that it doesn't matter?
I think it's a relatively low number for the majority of us. But again, it's what you do with it when you have it. If you all of a sudden go out and buy a 20,000 square foot house, and you buy the Lamborghinis, and then all of a sudden the associated cost of everything you do goes up. You know, if you are smart and you upgrade your house, if you want to a better location and don't necessarily go bigger, and, you know, be modest in your spending of money, you probably can fare fairly well and make sure your kids are taken care of and all that stuff. You know, I think that's what we all aspire to do, is, you know, retire comfortably. And I'd like to retire at 40. I'd love to. If I could retire at 50, man, that would be fantastic. But I'd probably have to work until I'm, you know, 75 the way I'm going right now. So, all right, let me go ahead here. And the last article, last thing I've got for you guys today is Spotify made their debut here in the United States a couple of months ago. And there's apparently been a couple of claims out that, and some studies done that saying that streaming music is damaging to record sales. And I'm just like, okay, we're going to have this conversation. But a distributor representing more than 200 labels has withdrawn its entire catalog from Spotify, Napster, SimFi, and radio. And this NPD group, and part of NARM, I don't know who they are, National Association for something, came out with the results suggesting that subscription services, where you pay that flat fee to access a giant jukebox in the sky, is discouraging other forms of music purchasing. Now, I'm going to ask everyone to be honest here. First of all, just start, we'll go across the row. Andy, do you subscribe to any streaming music service?
I have Spotify on my PC, not being used. I use Pandora.
Okay. Paul, do you subscribe to any streaming service?
Man, I love Spotify. Spotify is awesome because I can take my Nike workout on my iPhone and I can add a tune from Spotify and do a complete workout, and I can pull up any song that I want, no matter what, instantly. There's very, very few songs that you can't get on Spotify. So I'm a Spotify fanboy.
Steve, do you?
I don't use any streaming audio content. I buy everything through iTunes, and then I decide where I want to put it.
Okay, so I have a streaming account with Spotify. I pay for their premium service. So the next question I want to ask is, Andrew, when was the last time you bought a track on iTunes? Or anywhere?
Unless it was something that I wanted to create my own, you know, phone tone for that, something like, it would have to be a specialty thing. I would say over a year since I bought any type of track.
Paul, how about you?
Oh, I never buy any tracks. With Spotify, there's no need to.
Steve, how about you? Of course, you said you buy some stuff all the time.
That's the only way I do it, and that was last evening.
Okay. So I would say I've bought maybe 5 tracks in the last year, singles, 99-cent singles. So their study's right. The majority of us here have streaming accounts, Now, and we don't buy too much music. So then now the next question really is, and here's what I'm going to, this is the crux of my argument. We'll see if my prediction proves to be true. So Andrew, if they didn't have a streaming service that you could pay for, would you be buying tracks at 99 cents a piece?
Yes. I have to have some form of music, but I, to be honest with you, I would be going for the deals where you get the album for the, so you get a little bit of a deal to it.
Paul, how about you? Would you be buying
music? Never, never. Under any circumstances will I buy music.
See, I'm the same. I probably would not buy a lot of music. So the question, I guess the question is, do they, would they rather get, you know, a percentage of my subscription to Spotify every month or hardly anything. So maybe we're going to see these, you know, I love the, you know, when the Zune came out with the Zune Pass, that was the best thing that ever happened for my kids because I could basically say, load up whatever music you want on the Zune, take it with you. You're not out there sneaker netting or sharing or using peer-to-peer services behind my back. Spotify now allows them to load what they want to load and stream here at the house and on their phones. So, it's an interesting move here. So musicians and labels are,
how much do you think
go ahead.
How much do you think the artists are actually getting paid now? 'Cause I remember way back in the Napster fiasco that went with that, and some of the main rock groups saying, I had $100 million worth of track money that of all our recordings that we have, which is now worthless. And it sounds like that's the argument they were saying now with the streaming stuff. How much do the actual artists get paid for their work anymore?
Be honest with you.
Very, very little. Infinitesimal. If they're relying on Spotify, they don't get much. But that's the only way they're going to get. I'm going to pay Spotify $10 a month, and they can divvy it up however they want. I don't know what percentage of that goes to the artists. But I'm like Todd. I'm not going to buy music. I'm just not going to do it. Not going to do it. Not going to go there.
You know, you can flip this around and take the other side when we talk about movies and Netflix, for example. A fee-based service. It's not movie purchase basis. So in that light, do you guys have the same philosophy in how you watch and buy that kind of content?
I haven't.
When Netflix screwed up by going two ways, one with streaming and one with DVDs, they lost me. I had been a loyal Netflix person up until that point, and then I'm gone. They interrupted my Mad Men watching spree by doing that.
Now, we never ever, before any of these services ever bought, we never bought DVDs. I would buy the rare DVD for Christmas. We rented everything. And I can't even tell you the last time I bought a DVD. We just never have. And I see folks that have these DVD collections of 1,000 DVDs. And the first thing I say is, why? You know, why do you have that? Why have you spent that huge of sums of money? It's just basically they want to be able to grab it and play it when they want to and not have to worry not whether it's available on the stream. But for me, it's, you know, I've lived on limited resources, so I've always tried to, you know, try to spend wisely, and DVDs have never been my forte. Now, Steve, do you do the same? Do you buy DVDs as well?
No, and that's why I bring it up.
Oh.
I think it's a difference of space and cost.
I think you're right.
I'll tell you what, though, with Netflix paying me the X number a month now has saved me so much because I was able to see all the movies that I would have spent $13 a ticket at and went, boy, am I glad I'm watching it here.
Yeah.
Basically, I've got TiVo, and I used to have Netflix. I loved Netflix before they doubled their price.
Yeah, I'm still on Netflix. I'm still willing to pay double. And we do supplement with Redbox $1.10 rentals or whatever they cost now, $1.10 or whatever it is. Well, guys, interesting conversation. And, of course, those of you that are watching this post show, you can find this over at geeknewscentral.com. And we're going to be ramping up. We're going to start our pre-CES coverage on December 1st. We're going to be putting up videos of all the hosts at TPN.TV. We've actually put up information this week on how people can actually get ready to be seen and be heard at CES by applying to be have one of the team members come to their booth or come to our booth and be seen on our live stream. So, of course, two of our hosts that are going to be at CES have been on the show today, Steve at wavesoftech.com. He's going to be one of our team members covering the show. I'm glad to have you on the team this year, Steve. And then, Andrew, where can they find your show at?
You can get me at Geocaching World on RVNN TV. And if you also look up the buzzword of head hard hat and Google it, you'll find me there as well.
So, of course, Andrew's going to be covering a lot of the GPS space, a lot of mobile apps, cameras, stuff that that really appeals to the geocaching world that they can use in tools. So we look forward to seeing stuff that he rounds up. So it's going to be kind of cool that you're going to be able to focus on that category. And it'll be fun to see, because we've never had anyone focus on a specific set of categories every year. And you know, just separately there, Andrew, why don't you send me an email with the categories that you think you're going to really want to be able to focus on. And that's going to kind of help us in planning too. But Paul, are you going to be able to watch us at all while we're streaming live there in Vegas?
I wouldn't miss it. I'll look for it. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope you make it down to South By this year.
Yeah, I got to decide whether I'm going to come. And you know, you've got a celebrity moving into your area, you know.
That would be?
Adam Curry is moving into Austin as we speak.
Really?
Yeah, he's packed
up. I'll have to go look him up then. I'll have to go go have a coffee with him or something if he'll do that with me.
Yeah, he left L.A. Sometime, I guess, early in the month, and probably he's already got his place. I don't know. I got to get caught up and find out what's going on, but I get into the Texas area once in a while. Matter of fact, I think I'll be in Texas the week of, got to look at my calendar here, the week of December be in town. So actually, I probably might even be doing a meetup there, Paul, on Friday the 9th. I'll let you know.
Definitely let me know. And I'll see if I can track down Adam Curry and see what he's up to.
So, but yeah, he loved Texas so much that he moved there when he was on his whirlwind tour that he went on this summer. But you know, it's I've always told my wife, if there was any place that I was going to move to outside of Hawaii, Austin would be pretty doggone high on my selection list. It really would. I really like Austin. It's a unique, first of all, it's a fun town, lots to do, lots to, and you got a major airport hub there. You can get anywhere from Austin out of the Austin airport. And taxes are right in Texas.
Well, I'll tell you, you're better than the people in Oklahoma, because in Oklahoma, all they have is a hate for Texas. But in Austin, we don't hate Oklahoma. We do not hate Oklahoma. We love our music. We love our film. We love our nature. We love our fitness and everything that goes on here. And we have no hate for anyone.
And of course, Steve, you're in California. Where in California are you at?
I'm actually in Tehachapi, California, up in the mountains of the Mojave Desert. And it's darn cold right now.
And all I can say is I'm sorry you have to pay the taxes in California. My God, how can you afford it?
Oh, we could do a whole show on that. I have considered moving out of this hole.
Yeah. Tehachapi. I think I've drove through there.
It's probably.
Yeah. So, Andrew, I forgot. Where are you located at?
I'm all the way on the other coast. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
So Raleigh is a big army town, yeah?
Oh, yeah. You got Fayetteville, where you have Fort Bragg and a bunch of other places around. But beautiful state. Shy of before the cold front came through, we were in the 80s in shorts and enjoying the nice weather. And, yeah, we're roughing it now in the 50s.
I'm not even going to tell you what the weather is here. So, all right, guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. And those of you that have been on the stream, thanks for coming out as well. And What did he say? Someone is saying in chat. He says, I think it was on the last Thursday's podcast that Adam talked about getting stopped at a border check, looking like a hippie with a Dutch lady in tow and a drug sniffing dog hit on their car. He said the guys were disappointed when they didn't find anything illegal. So that's funny. All right. Well, guys, I think that's it. And we'll see you next time. And everyone else on the stream, we're going to put it in replay mode here in a minute. Got podcast awards ceremony. Don't know how many podcasters are going to show up at 7 p.m. Eastern today. I'm a little bit worried because we haven't had a lot of the winners check in. So I'm probably going to be bad mouthing some shows come 7 o'clock. If nothing else, it'll be entertaining from that standpoint. But come over to podcastawards.com at 7 p.m. Eastern for our award ceremony today. But guys, thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Great show, Todd. Great show as usual.